Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, where Michael W. Dean and Yvi Bami cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by a Liberty Radio Network.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Distance Learning Anarchy Series with Freedom Fiends Michael W. Dean.
Broadcasting from my windowless bunker.
And he had a
go-go.
Go
Freedom Fiends.
Worms.
Wimes.
You guys both there, Davi and...
What's up, Lou?
Hey.
The iron meerkat and the shiny badger, and I am the
titanium hamster.
The titanium.
I'm the shiny meerkat. What am I? The strong hamster.
You're the iron hamster.
Iron hamster. Yeah, that's it. So let's do some cussing. I'll start. Shit, piss, fuck, motherfucker, goddamn, cocksucker, Stefan Molyneux, boobies.
God, Obama, Bush, well, Clinton, fine. State, Pelosi, Barbara, Boxer.
Okay, Lou?
This is Feinsteining Bull Schumer.
You can say what you want to say. We're not on radio anymore. We got kicked off radio.
What was the one I wanted? It wasn't state. There was some. Gox. I wanted to introduce Gox.
Oh, yeah.
Gox is a swear word.
So if you're listening...
Yeah. Like, go gox yourself.
If people are listening on the podcast and not on the radio... you can't
are we recording already?
Yeah, you can't hear this on the radio because...
Hello, world.
Rolling.
I'm being fucked with, or else just, you know, Wyoming's infrastructure sucks, even though Halliburton keeps us strong. And we're going to talk about that, but I've been having internet problems where, like, it's weird. The internet is always there, but it's sometimes really weak. And I've had them come out three times. And I called GCN and we did a test, and it wasn't strong enough internets to connect and do the show. But apparently, it's strong enough to connect via Skype and do a podcast. So we're doing what Nima Vidati and I used to do every day for 3 years, is just doing a podcast and recording it and putting it up on the fucking internets. And here's the cool thing. It's like, it also proves we can't be stopped if the government's fucking with us, because GCN is playing a best of from last week. So we're still going to be on those radio stations and the LRN stream and the GCN stream. And we don't take calls anyway, so no one will even probably know. And we're fucking putting out a fucking goddamn bitchin' fucking boobies podcast tonight.
Some podcasts will be recorded for quality assurance.
So fuck. Last time I was involved in one of these things, I was stinking drunk at Porkfest, and I just had my picture taken with you holding hands in a porta potty without a divider, or not porta potty, a regular bathroom.
Yeah, that was about 6 hours before you did that podcast, but you don't remember that. This one will be better because, I mean, the content may not be as lively, but it probably will. But I'm sober and I'm recording it, so it'll be good.
Well, that was my one time a year of getting drunk, and I think I missed last year. So, yeah, I guess I was due for it that time. But, yeah, I'm still sober. But as a matter of fact, I'm not wearing pants, so it's just like a regular show and just like being at Porkfest.
Well, I called you before the show to tell you that we couldn't do a radio show, but we could do a fucking podcast tonight. Shit, fake, motherfucking boobies, Molyneux, Barbara Streisand, boobies. I forgot how to curse. I don't even know how to do it anymore, man. But
I think you can say most of those words on the air.
I don't think you can. But Lou says,
let's try it.
I wanted to try this with Lou like 20 minutes ago, and he's like, oh, I just woke up from a nap. I have to do my morning constitutional. I'm like, what, masturbate? And he's like, no, the other thing people do. And I'm like, well, you don't smoke pot. What are you talking about? And he said, take a shit. And I'm like, Well, good. Thank you for sharing. And
that was what I thought constitution meant.
I thought it meant taking a walk. Taking a constitutional means taking a walk or writing stuff down on paper and then pointing guns at people's heads.
You know what I need to do? I need to make a meme of a Mogwai from the Gremlins movie holding a piece of paper that says, "We the people will not eat after midnight."
Lou, expand on that, Lou.
I have no idea what the hell he's talking about.
if a Mogwai eats after midnight, he turns into a gremlin. That's the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Shit.
That's old school.
Well, isn't there also some Disney beast that you can't get wet or give water to?
That's also a Mogwai. They multiply if you get them wet.
Yeah, I'm old school, man. They'd melt. I like tribbles.
That's witches.
Oh, damn.
Fuck. You there?
So that's tribbles what just reproduce. That's what they do. It doesn't matter if you feed them or not. They're born pregnant.
You guys both said complete paragraphs at the same time. I don't know. All I heard was blah, 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 born pregnant.
Yeah, tribbles. Tribbles are born pregnant.
Yeah. They're kind of like Democrats in that way. I heard a really good one today. I think the title of the show should be it was really good. Let me find it. If you guys got anything in the meantime, I'm open to it.
Okay.
Okay.
Brainstorming taglines for the episode. That's the theme, huh?
It was that guy, Kyle Bennett. I really like him. He said, "Every accusation from a liberal is really a confession." And I want to expand that too.
That's interesting. I'm going to have to think about that a lot.
I want to make this the title of the show. Every accusation from a statist is really a confession. This is not radio. I can burp. I didn't have to hit the mute button. Okay, so every accusation.
I really want that to be true. I'm going to have to think about it, though.
Well, it's very true of liberals. The first time I heard the concept of liberals was with gun grabbers when they say, you know, if everyone had guns, there'd be blood in the streets. And some pro-gun guy said that's because liberals can't handle their anger and would shoot people they disagree with.
What about if it weren't for believing in God, people would murder each other?
That's not true.
It's not true, but I hear people say that. That's one of the sort of like lazy apologetics things that I've heard Christians say.
I don't know. Lou, do you believe
it's kind of a confession, I think, isn't it? It's saying if you successfully talk me out of this stuff I'm spewing, I might kill you.
Lou, do you believe in God?
You know what? I've done a very good job of not letting anybody know what my religious beliefs are, and I think I'm going to keep it up.
Okay. I believe in God, and I think God does not like you. Us. I'm of the Fight Club idea. I'm definitely a theist. It's somewhere between that and just thinking, yeah, there's something bigger than all of us, but it doesn't really care, and it doesn't, you know, answer your prayers and make the bus come on time or make your family members survive cancer kind of thing. You know, it just doesn't care.
Or change Coke to Pepsi or keep Jules and the other guy, Vincent Vega, from getting shot up with a hand cannon.
That is a pretty awesome scene. I heard some great great man, libertarian philosopher, the other day comparing himself to that scene. Here's the thing. Please, I'll just come out and say it.
You're not going to talk about Michael. Before we go off on a rant, are you going to talk about send in money now?
No, I've absolutely made a decision though over the past couple weeks is that I am absolutely maintaining my amateur status so I can compete in the Liberty Olympics. I for the first time ever over the past 3 months, the Freedom Fiends had some advertisers, and we were making like $600 or $700 a month from advertisers, and the ads just all ended on Sunday, and none of them wanted to renew it. And I was like, you know, I could call and make some calls and try to get some people to buy this ad time. And I'm like, fuck it. I'm just going to make ads about Catmuff and why people shouldn't vote. Like things, you know, like parody stuff that doesn't even have the Fiend's name in it just to get it on radio. And I like that. And I was talking to somebody else today who's like a well-known libertarian writer and speaker and stuff. And he wants to make a living at it. And I'm like, no, man, just don't quit your day job. Don't try to make a living at it. And you'll have a lot more fun. And you can do whatever you want and not be beholden to donators and listeners and advertisers, man. Just fucking.
It is a really unique kind of megaphone to control your own commercials.
It's to me, it's more mind blowing than that we're actually on radio. Is that it hit me the other day. It was like, and I posted about this. I said, you know, running a syndicated radio show on 26 stations, 7 days a week, a lot of work and not much money. Being able to write a parody ad, produce it, making fun of the system, and have it playing on 26 radio stations the next day, priceless.
Are we still on 26 radio stations?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so has there been any blowback from the cat muff?
Not that I've heard of. Although, I mean, it's entirely possible that a station can stop playing you and not let you know, although it's a violation of their contract with GCN. But it has been known to happen with other shows in the past, but generally they let you know. And according to the contract, they're supposed to give you a month to before they drop you, and they usually do. We've been dropped from three stations. One was because they sold our time to somebody. One was because the station became country and western and quit having talk. And one was because it was funny. It was a guy who's like, yeah, I kind of like you guys' show. I like your politics, but you just keep talking about all these rock bands and rap bands, and none of my audience knows who they are.
Well, with the one that went to a country format, you could just had more Randy and Jack on.
The gentleman of the Fiends?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what Randy and Jack is.
Randy? Well, Jack is.
Oh, Randy England.
Jack is no longer a Fiends co-host. You missed that memo,
right,
Lou?
No, I saw it.
Who's Jack? We're still friends. Jack was.
I'm out of the loop, man.
Jack was the guy. There's so many Fiends. The Fiends don't even know.
Jack was like fucking Amway.
Jack was the guy from North Carolina. They had a really thick Carolina accent, and he's a church going guy, and he drinks a lot of moonshine. That guy.
Okay.
He's very cool, but he got a job and just couldn't do it. He was working during all the night shifts and weekend shifts.
Well, I hope him success in all of his future endeavors.
Yeah, he's a great guy, and I'd have him back in a heartbeat. And then there's two women that are supposed to be coming on as Fiends third wheels at night, but they're still waiting to like get upgraded computers or something. I don't know.
Are you ready to release names?
Oh, the women's names?
Yeah.
You know them. Go ahead and say. I mean, I don't have an opposition to it. I just don't want to put them on the spot if they decide they don't want to do it for some reason.
Oh, is Gretchen one of them?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I met her at our Liberty Fest last month.
Yeah, and she was on the show for a short segment, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's pretty cool.
Yeah. So I want to talk about I don't want to talk about Molyneux, but I do want to talk about how I've given up on bashing other libertarians, even when I think they're really, really, really wrong, because people are stupid and don't listen, and they have to make their own mistakes, and I can't save them from themselves.
Exactly.
And the same thing with, I have in the past gone after Cantwell, and I've gone after Mark Stevens for doing stuff I thought was really stupid that I thought harmed people. And in the grand scheme of things, it's like, Stevens is going to do what he wants and people are going to listen to his advice and they may end up in prison. Who knows? It's not my business. I can't, I'm not the libertarian Consumer Reports. And Cantwell really, like, after dealing with the Molyneux thing, Cantwell is like a gnat on liberty and Molyneux is like the 9,000 pound gorilla in the room that is really far more, I think, just leading people down a straight path. But Cantwell, I'm actually starting to dislike him less. Now that I'm hearing him on Free Talk Live, I'm really of the opinion that he is responding to Ian Freeman's love bombing. Like, I know how Ian works. Like, Ian will take someone that he thinks is not, who ain't right and have him around and treat him with love, whereas I would rather shun them into the darkest corner. And Ian's thing is working, man. And I thought, who knows? You can't really tell what someone's like from what they're like on the radio. They show the part of themselves they want to. But I talked to Derek J. Freeman about this, and he hangs out with Cantwell, and he says, yeah, he's changing as a person. He's becoming.
So I want to hear this stuff validated. What are you talking about?
What do you mean?
Give me some evidence.
Oh, just he sounds more pleasant and sounds less like he has a chip on his shoulder. And also, I found out that one of the things that I thought was really creepy about him, of him going after some guy with bear spray because the guy had, because of a beef on the internet. He told the whole story of that on the show today. I didn't know this, but like, he had a long history with that guy before. It didn't start on the internet,
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, I do want to make a correction today, though, of something incorrect that Chris Cantwell said, because I sent an email.
We'll be issuing retractions for other people.
Yes, yes. I sent an email in to Free Talk Live, but they didn't. Ian doesn't always check it during the show. He said Cantwell was like, they were talking about how great psychedelics are and how Cantwell was bashing AA. And he said, yeah, a lot of people don't know this, but when AA started, the founder was handing out LSD to try to cure people's alcoholism. But then AA turned into NA, and then NA, you can't do any drugs. And I was like, that's so not really how it happened. The founder of AA, Bill W., was experimenting with LSD to cure alcoholics in the late 50s and early 60s. But when AA started in 1935, and LSD didn't exist, it was invented in 39, and the effects were discovered in 43. So he had it all backwards. It was not scientific. And, you know, well, actually, it doesn't really matter that I'm making this correction. I wanted to make this correction because we're on LRN, but this show will not be played on LRN, so fuck it.
But now the internet knows.
Yeah.
See, I'm willing to bet, well, no, maybe not.
Have you ever seen that picture? It's a cartoon of, like, a man on the computer and his wife's, like, in the corner of the room, like, in lingerie, trying to, like, lure him. Like, come to bed, dear. And he's like, I can't come to bed. Somebody's wrong on the internet.
That's true. I've been that guy.
I've been that guy too.
Yeah, when you talk about using drugs to treat alcoholism, wasn't cocaine used by Sigmund Freud to treat alcoholism also?
I know he used it to cure morphine addiction.
How'd that go?
Really well, remarkably well. I mean, I cured my alcoholism with intravenous narcotic use. I don't recommend it, but it works.
All right. I mean, I guess if you just need another addiction, that's a way to do it.
I think it just all comes down to the hamster in your brain needs to be stimulated by something. And, you know, they say in AA, this is not canonical AA, but it's something that's said in AA a lot. Like, it's not in the book. It's not in their Bible, but people say it. That to stay so, you know, getting sober is easy. To stay sober, you need something to do and someone to love. And that's really true, man. Like, basically something to do and someone to love keeps the hamster in your brain happy and stimulated. Whereas if you don't have that, I've seen people in AA get sober. I've known more than one person in AA that got more than 10 years sober and then put a gun in their mouth. And basically it was because, you know, partially because they had probably underlying mental issues they didn't deal with. And probably partially because they made AA their life and, you know, didn't have a life outside of it. And that's in dark. California, where people and that's in California. They put guns in their mouth where people don't even have guns. So probably happens more in Wyoming.
Seems like a hole in your story there. Obviously, nobody in California puts a gun in their mouth.
No.
Unless it's like a bong decorated to look like a gun.
Lou, what say you?
Obviously, back in the days of using cocaine to treat alcoholism and opium addiction and LSD, they obviously didn't have the freedom fiends to stimulate the hamster in their brain.
Yeah. I mean, I'm married. That's my someone to love. And I have cats. That's something else to love. And the freedom fiends, really, I mean, I don't think I'd put a gun in my mouth without the freedom fiends, but I would sit on my hands and twiddle my thumbs without the freedom fiends.
So do you think this means that my lifelong addiction to nail biting has rescued me from addictive habit forming around all the substances I've done in my life?
You know, I just realized I've seen you bite your nails and it didn't really register because I'm a nail biter.
Yeah, I'm pretty bad at it.
You look pretty meditative when you're doing it, though. Like, I always think I think I've seen you do it in person at Porkfest and never like talk to you while you're doing it because you look so intent. Like, oh, don't mess with him, he's biting his nails, man.
He's busy, he's working on something important.
Lou, what's the hamster in your brain about?
Oh gosh, it's about outdoorsy stuff, man.
I gotta
it's
pee. About going you to guys, you guys talk about it, I'll be right back.
All right, tell me about outdoorsy stuff.
I care, but I'll hear it tomorrow when I listen to
this. He's gonna listen tomorrow. Yeah.
Well, let's save this till when Michael gets back. Is this something that he was interested in? Because I just got back from Libpear. I had to do laundry and pack new stuff for the next trip out. So, Davi, tell us about this nail biting. Where does it come from? How do you feel when you're biting your nails?
I don't know. It's as long as I can remember. I mean, I probably learned it from my dad. My dad bites his nails. And he's struggled with it his whole life and come up with various tricks to try and deal with it. And when I was growing up, my parents tried to get me to deal with it by like putting bad tasting stuff on my fingernails. And when I went through my goth phase, I actually dealt with it by putting nail polish on, because then I would bite the nail polish and not damage the nail. And so I had nice nails while I was goth. But, you know, it's unbecoming for men to wear nail polish as adults. Not really. But it's just not my style anymore.
Okay. Other than that,
I gave up. I just gave up. I discovered at some point in my life that it was everyone around me who wanted me to stop, and I had no genuine interest in stopping, and that was why I was failing.
Okay, I guess I succumbed to peer pressure, because I used to do it quite a bit, and then I think as in like eighth, maybe, or between eighth and ninth grade, something like that, I'm dating this girl, and I'm biting my nails, and she says, "Why do you do that? That's disgusting." And I stopped.
My parents were really big in trying to stop me. I think that when I was a little kid, it was like in the newspapers, like articles, like how to, you know, like children that that bite their nails grow up to be arsonists or something. I don't know, because they were really adamant about it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe it's sort of like a low-level anxiety all the time. That's why it's the hamster in your brain,
right?
My
mother read some article in Red Book magazine or something that said, if your kids bite their nails, tell them to bite their toenails instead. They'll do that for a while, and they get so disgusted, they'll give up both. But I actually do both now.
That's a gateway.
It's a gateway.
A gateway nail.
I bite other people's nails. No.
Oh, God, I wish I was drunk right now.
So,
Davi was asking, I used to chew on thumbtacks.
Davi was
that
asking,
got me to stop biting my nails for a while.
There you go. That sounds like an urban myth, like, you know, some tough guy who chews on thumbtacks.
No, but I did. It was about having something that occupied my mouth enough to sort of keep me distracted, but also sort of important enough that I couldn't completely ignore it, right? Because if I got lazy about it, I would stab myself by mistake.
I think that means that you're gay. If you just like
is that
to
what
suck,
that means?
Suck on stuff. Yeah, me too.
Well, I definitely have like an oral fixation. I'm just not attracted to men.
Yeah. I'm chain vaping right now.
I'm chain smoking.
You could get a little louder, Lou. You could get a little more up on your mic there.
I am chain smoking. I'm enjoying some nice cigarettes from the Indian reservation that are tax free. They were 20 a carton.
Wow. For $2. So how much are they not at the Indian reservation?
I think around here they're, I don't know, about somewhere between $5 and $7 a pack, depending upon where you go.
You know, in New York State, some places in New York State, they allow the Indians to sell gasoline and tobacco tax-free, and a lot of white people go on the reservation to buy them. But then the cops set up outside the reservation and, like, write you a ticket for the taxes.
Really?
Yep.
I didn't see that when I
was going
through
there. We don't have a break
there.
Schedule, do we?
No. We should,
That's cool.
At 30 minutes, we should stop for a second, and I should save the file, but we can just keep going. This is how Neiman and I did it. We just talked. And then every 30 or 35 minutes, we'd save the file and then just keep talking or take a bathroom break or whatever. But since there's three of us, if one of us does take a bathroom break, I think we can just keep going and do, you know, a full hour and a half or something.
Yeah,
and,
you know
what'd be kind of funny? I should put in the intro and outro I used to put on the Neema cast, although I think it says with Neema Vidati, but I could, like, you know, mess it up or something so it just says with
That's an interesting notion. With enough fiends in the day, you could leapfrog a podcast 24 hours a day.
Maybe we should do a, what's it called when you raise money? A telethon sometime.
Telethon? A podathon?
I don't think
we'd fiend-a-thon.
I don't think we'd raise much, but I'll bet Ian Freeman would give us 24 hours of LRN sometime.
We will not go off of the air until we get bored.
or enough money for 14 Comrexes.
I would really like one of you guys to have a Comrex. If I had the money, I'd buy somebody one. Although I'm really thinking that with Fiendphone, we won't need a Comrex. I'm thinking Fiendphone will be solid enough for connecting to the network, and I can get GCN to adopt it, and then I can just do one show a week.
What's going on with Fiendphone? Give us a status report.
We raised about $1,100 after the – no, about – no, $1,050 in – cash and Bitcoin after the after Indiegogo took their cut on the cash, and I have sent it all to Derek Slopey, and he intends to work on it and says that by January 1st, he will have a working version that doesn't have all the bells and whistles, but will work.
Outstanding. And is he going to do that at home, or is he going to go out in the ambulance?
That
thing was cool, bro.
That thing was great. What, Dobby?
Does the ambulance have a name yet?
Oh, you and I were working on names for it. Yeah, I don't think so. What did we call it? The Mobile Command Studio?
Yeah, the mobile. I don't remember now.
The mobile
Authority Resistance Studio.
Mobile Assault Studio. Well, I think it depends on what he's doing with it at a particular event. Like he does, you know, he goes to like quadricopter events, and they're not using it as a, you know, audio studio or video studio at all. So it's called something else when he does that.
Okay. I was calling it the one of two places that had internet service at Borkfest.
What was the other one?
Ben's trailer or mobile home.
Yep.
Did I tell you I'm putting the ambulance in my Blandaby story? It's the mobile radio studio.
Ah, cool. Yeah,
that was the one I was telling you about. Essentially, in this story, like radio is actually the frequency. It turns out is the secret to time travel. And so
that's up there with flux capacitors, brother.
It is. That's totally what I'm up to. It's kooky mad science. And this is why, like, to prevent yourself from being subject to these weird energy waves that mess with time, you put yourself in a Faraday cage, and that's how you go sort of forward and backwards.
I think you should have your version of the flux capacitor. I think you should have, like, you know, a radio broadcast unit with an added spooner coil or something.
Oh, yeah. It's called it generates an Averroes field, which is the field in which time travel becomes possible. And then the magic thing is it's called I don't remember what it's called, but it's essentially it's a cylinder of azurite. Azurite is a carbonate of copper, and so because it's blue instead of copper colored, for some reason it's magic. But yeah, you just replace some radio components with azurite instead of copper, and then it turns them into time machines. But yeah, I'm using the Tesla Spirit radio. That was
listen to LRN.
Dobby Barker.
That's on LRN right now. I just wanted to check in and see what episode they're playing. I hope they're not just playing that Nirvana fucking one from years ago.
But that was the best 1 hour of a 2 hour show that you guys have probably ever did.
Yeah, but they play both hours of it.
Oh God.
The second hour of that was one of the worst hours of Fiends ever.
Oh, it was bad.
Yeah, that guy. Well, Lou, Davi wanted to talk about Russell Brand, and I kind of feel like Chris Novoselic is the Russell Brand of improving democracy or something, but not as interesting, maybe.
I imagine they'd get along.
I don't know, man. Russell Brand is kind of over the top, and Novoselic is really kind of understated. He's kind of more like a gentleman farmer or something. Whereas, you know, okay. I think if you went into a room with both of them and said, who wants to go get some tranny hookers in Crocodile? I think Brand would go with you. I think Novoselic could say, I'm busy.
Well, he says he's been clean for 11 years, so maybe not the Crocodile.
Who? Brand?
Brand.
I think he'd do the, I think
he'd make an exception for you. Is that what you're saying?
No, he'd fuck the tranny hooker and give her the Crocodile and live vicariously.
Maybe.
And then I'd sit in the corner filming it and masturbating and crying.
That's good radio.
But why would you be crying?
I don't know.
Understand that part.
I would not be crying. It's just something people say, like, you know, like the odd man out at the orgy sits in the corner masturbating and crying, although I wouldn't be that guy, but it's just kind of a funny image, masturbating and crying.
An adult wallflower.
Yeah. Adult wallflower. Yeah, so you wanted to talk more about this every accusation by a statist is really a confession?
Yeah. What is a statist accusation? It's stuff like you don't care about the poor, or you just want to kill babies, or it's all you just want. It's diagnosing your motive. So would you say that, like, you're saying, I want to do away with the welfare state, and then the progressive says, well, you don't care about the poor. You think that's an admission that they don't care about the poor?
I think that I don't trust any liberal who says they care about the poor unless they're out working at a soup kitchen. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, you're not caring about the poor by voting for someone to steal the money to help the poor.
And well, yeah, I could take it that way in the sense that they're saying, I don't want to do it. I want someone else to do it. And so this big abstract entity that does things I don't understand, it's essentially an appeal to magic. I want them to do it.
Yeah.
Appeal to magic.
It is. Government is an appeal to magic.
I don't know
how the math works. I don't know who's doing the work. It's just you push the government button and stuff gets done.
That should be the name of on the list of logical fallacies, an appeal to magic.
Yeah, your logical fallacy is government.
Well, when statists, especially liberals, but all statists, when they say what we need to do, what they really mean is what the government needs to point guns at your head to make you do.
What everyone other than me needs to do.
Yeah. And it's, what's really interesting when it comes to liberals, they love the welfare state, but they've never really taken a look at their handiwork. And I don't ask what has government done for the poor. I ask what has government done to the poor.
So what's a right wing example? Well, what a right wing
Lou, the Tuskegee experiments come to mind. Giving syphilis to poor black people while telling them they're giving them vaccination.
Here's your print. Who would give poor people syphilis?
There you go.
Yeah, here's your proto Obamacare.
Hookers. Yeah, that was your proto Obamacare. Yeah.
Yeah.
Panels is an accusation. That's totally true. When right wingers say, oh, you just want death panels, they really are saying that they want death panels.
I think a lot of right wingers
do want death panels, but they want ideological death panels like an Inquisition.
Yeah. Well, there was some, I forget who it was, but there was some kind of like proto libertarian patriot movement guy in the 70s who, you know, gets lumped in with libertarians a lot, but really was just an angry, cranky constitutionalist who hated Democrats. But I can't remember who it is, but the guy did an essay during the Vietnam War basically saying that Nixon, or I forget if it was during Nixon or the guy before him, LBJ, it was one of them, but he's basically saying that the government should machine gun war protesters. And he was cheered on by right wingers. So there's your death panels right there. And a lot of them think that drug dealers should be shipped to an island and have it nuked. A lot of them think that if you don't love America, you should be killed. When they say, if you don't love America, get out, they don't really want you to go thrive in Switzerland. They want you to be thrown in a prison in America, probably.
You don't hear it anymore, but I remember when I was a kid, people used to talk about putting all of the HIV people on an island.
Yeah.
You have been saved.
Rolling. We're rolling. You've been saved, file. Yeah. Ooh,
that was cool. What was that?
That was me
foghorn.
Moving my mic stand.
Oh.
I'll do it again.
It sounds like you're getting too close to a lighthouse.
You know, I'm working on this this video on how to podcast. I've been talking about doing it for like 4 or 5 months. I did the one on how to set up WordPress for a podcast. And really,
Wait a minute. I just want to point something out. You're making a video about how to podcast, and now you're podcasting about how to make a video. Am I right?
Yes. And literally, like, this video is literally going to be for the Fiends co-hosts only. Anybody else who sees it, I hope they enjoy it. But it's for you guys so you can replace me. So if suddenly I get droned, you know, you can keep doing your own shows or keep doing the Fiend show, at least as a podcast. And Derek Slopey has all the login information, so you guys could still use that site even. He can move the he's an admin on the registrar. Like, he could, you know, if I died, he could take it all over and share it with you guys. So, and I've told him that. But, you know, all my secret tips for how I record well, I'm putting it into a video. And part of it is, Davi and I, we did that phone conversation, that Skype conversations the other day. I videotaped myself. Didn't have Davi on video because it's better audio if you're not doing the video on Skype. But I got a bunch of pictures of Davi off of Facebook today, and I'm going to put them, like, you know, in one side of the screen when Davi's talking. One of them, it's kind of funny too. There's at one point later in the when I'm talking on my own, I say, I'm talking about microphone choice. I'm like, yeah, don't ever use one of those horrible Yeti mics. They look really cool, but they totally suck. And I have a picture of Davi using a Yeti mic. I'm going to use it. Yeah.
You know, after that email, I went and looked through that my own list because, I mean, other people tag you and then it shows up on your profile.
Yeah.
And there are pictures in there that are not of me. I don't even know why. I don't even know why they're tagged.
Yeah, well, I'm going to have you see the there's one that doesn't look very much like you, but I think it's you. It's in a. I found it on Google Images. I'll send it to you. But
well, I've been a shapeshifter all my life, and so there are a lot of pictures out there that don't look like me.
I like some of the younger. Like, there's some pictures of you like that. You look like you're about 20, and you're speaking to like the city council or something. Do you know that one?
There was one when look, I maybe
over, over.
So I spoke to the Oakland City Council when they wanted to get their drone, but that was only a couple of years ago.
Well, you looked a lot younger than a couple of years ago.
If you see me, if you find pictures of me in my 20s, I'm probably wearing a top hat and pretending to be Emperor Norton.
Yeah.
Now, I saw a picture of you, Davi. It was playing in like a grunge band or something like that on stage. When was that?
Yeah, that was 2003. That was Discordia, that photo. The one where Wally is playing a guitar with a sword. Is that the one you're thinking of?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and that's me on bass in the top hat. So, yeah.
So all I was going to say about this this video thing is, so I have all of the video shot and all of the screenshots taken, screenshot video of me editing and stuff, and I put it all into a timeline. It's around 45 minutes, and I'm moving it around and seeing where I have to overdub stuff and where I have to film something else and put it in. But, you know, the parts are 95% there. And I was thinking, wouldn't it be cool if computers were smart enough that like they knew what kind of choices you'd make and you could just import all your audio and video and stills and music and talking and then press a button that says make movie and just go get lunch and you come back and like your DVD player's open and there's like a fresh burn DVD, like it edits the movie for you.
Apple will get there.
Well, there is a button called make movie in Sony Vegas, which is a video editing program, but it's the same as the render button in other programs. But when I see that button, I always think, like, wouldn't it be cool if it really made the movie when you pressed make movie?
Yeah.
Hell, we could just have make radio show. You know, it would just like sample all your other radio shows and just do a show with your voice.
Imagine if like CGI got so good that you could just like write a script and then put it in the machine and it just produces a 3D movie for you, like a Pixar, just done.
Yeah, I think they can do that with just like the wireframe versions of them at this point pretty easily.
That's awesome.
I mean, I think you would have to have like, you know, kind of like almost HTML tags that you would put in, like, you know, Marsha goes stage left and faces Bill, like kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that could be, I think that's pretty close. There's actually, did you ever see the movie The Player with Tim Robbins?
Yes.
No.
Great
movie.
Long
time ago.
Great movie. But there's a scene in there where they're talking about it, and this is before reality TV, but basically like, there's a bunch of Hollywood film executives sitting around having lunch at some expensive restaurant, and one of them says something about, like, you know, getting rid of something, not even technology, but something someone's thinking of like, that would get rid of the need for writers. And then somebody else says, like, well, get rid of all those pesky actors and you can count me in, or something like that. Like, it's kind of it's kind of foreshadowing reality TV, I think.
Fiction will begin writing itself.
You know, Ben got contacted by some Hollywood producer who wanted to interview him about being a libertarian living life on the road. And Ben told him no, because we looked at the guy's, Ben ran it by me, and we looked at the guy's CV on IMDb, and it's like, you know, shark hunters, whale hunters, gold miners, crab catchers, you know, the rednecks of Appalachia. Like, it just, I've seen a lot of this guy's work, and it just looked like they would make Ben look like the toothless hick, you know,
living. They're looking for a spectacle.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not looking for truth. Although I did tell him, Ben told the guy no, but then I wrote Ben back and said that maybe he should tell the guy to talk to Cat Bleach and John Bush, because they're actually actively trying to sell a reality show on survivalism, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. So, you know, There it is. I did that good deed for the day. I hope Ben.
Although they've does it. Turned down producers that wanted the show because they wanted creative control. They're essentially worried about the same thing you're saying.
They won't get it. In my experience, I don't think I've dealt with Hollywood a little bit, and I know a lot of people have dealt with it a lot more, and they want spectacle.
Yeah, we want you to look like idiots. And we will do everything to make it happen.
I mean, there's people who've gotten their guns taken away because of things they said were encouraged to say on camera on some of those prepper shows.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep.
Now, I haven't watched too much of those Doomsday Prepper type shows. So I'm not really sure. From what I've heard from what I consider to be fairly reasonable people, some of the cats on those shows are a little bit off.
I just farted. Yeah, generally the people that they pick, I've seen several episodes of that show or part of several episodes, and generally the people they pick are generally pretty industrious and kind of smart. Like a lot of, you know, like I saw one that a guy and his family were like building literally a castle in the hills of the Carolinas. You know, they're not stupid, but they sound crazy, you know, the way they frame them, even to me, and I know better.
Well, they're edited that way.
Yeah, yeah. Because conflict is the essence of drama. And really, like, you know, Kat and John, from what I can tell, are living a peaceful, you know, not very stressful, mellow, successful, kind of off the grid life. And that's not good TV. You know, I mean, that's not what TV is. It could be, but it's not.
It is good TV, though. Have you seen any of the show?
No, I'm not saying.
It's phenomenal.
I'm not saying they don't make good TV. I'm saying that's not what Hollywood looks for. That's not what.
It's not easy. Like, yeah, Hollywood wants something where the premise is so obvious it's in the title.
Doomsday Preppers, yeah.
Do you want to marry Prince Harry?
Yeah.
Or going back to, I think it was the original reality series, The Real World on MTV.
Yeah.
That was horrible. That wasn't actually the first one. That was one of the first ones that kind of led to the glut of them now, and especially because I think that came out... I think right after that started, there was a writer's strike, and all of a sudden they were like, okay, we need like 20 Real Worlds to fill the writer's strike.
We'll just put cameras on a bunch of idiots broadcast.
that's basically what they did. I tried watching it when it first came out, and I'm like, oh my God, this is horrible. The world is full of idiots, and I think people were watching that, and they started imitating it.
Yeah, well, I think Real World is also when my generation stopped watching MTV.
I lived in, well, it's when they stopped having music. I lived in San Francisco when they were making the San Francisco one, and one of the guys living in the house, first of all, they were living in, like, you know, a house on the curvy part of Lombard Street that nobody in that crew could have possibly afforded. You know, they were all like, I mean, that's like millionaire house property, and these were all like people working at coffee shops and working as bike messengers. But the guy that was the bike messenger was a bike messenger when I was a bike messenger. What was his name? Puck. Yeah. The crazy weirdo.
Yeah.
The bike messengers all hated him. He was not a very good bike messenger, and he was a drunken idiot. But, you know, TV loved him, and he was a star for a minute. But the first reality show...
Just a few bad apples.
I thought he was a douche.
That's the point.
I thought he was fueled by vinegar and water big time.
Yeah. He could say piss on the air. I mean, on the podcast. So... the first reality show, though, was called An American Family, and it was in the late 60s on I think it was on PBS. Do you know about that?
Mm-mm.
It was hard to make, like, reality TV didn't really come onto its own until they had, like, good-looking videotape, because it was so expensive to, like, film someone 24/7 on film. But they did it. They actually, like, followed around this California family for a year with cameras and made a 12-episode... you know, weekly thing on PBS of it. And it was, you know, they got what they wanted. I mean, it was like, you know, the dad and mom were Republicans. The kids were all freaky Democrats. The son came out as gay on camera. The dad came out as having cheating on the wife on camera. The daughter came out as taking LSD on camera. Yeah, they got what they wanted.
That sounds like the New World Order lizard people trying to contaminate the youth and spread the idea that this deviance is acceptable behavior.
Trying to destroy traditional Americans.
There are people who believe that.
They hate America and they should move to Somalia.
I was listening to Free Talk Live today wondering if they're going to get kicked off a station or two for today. They were, they talked for about an hour about how great LSD and psychedelic mushrooms are. Ian and Chris Cantwell did.
They do that all the time.
Yeah, but they did it harder and longer because they didn't have Mark there to like say, guys, you know, to be the conflict. Mm. I like Mark. I like Ian. I'm sort of starting to like Chris, but yeah, they were going. I mean, it's kind of weird what works on radio, because I've seen like what Free Talk Live has gotten kicked off radio for, and I've seen what you know, what they've gotten kicked off some stations for, and I've seen what some stations won't take Freedom Fiends because of, and don't want something that when you pitch them, yeah, we're kind of like Free Talk Live, and they're like, click. I mean, they're remarkably successful with what they're doing, but I'm amazed they and us are on any stations at all. But I'm kind of square. Like, it's easier to be square because I'm married. I'm not out like banging teenagers or whatever. And I'm not, I don't take drugs, but they're like, they're talking on the air. Like, we'll run an ad, you know, we'll run an ad that says, you know, so-and-so, Ross Ulbrich was arrested for running the secret, you know, help Ross, you know, like we will talk theoretically about how the Silk Road is a good idea. Ian will say like, well, I was on the Silk Road today buying some hash, you know, it's a little different. Yeah.
Well, with them being through GCN, wouldn't they have the same type of stations that we have, which are more the Tea Party conservative types?
Yep. They are on. We're on most of the stations we're on, except for four of them. 22 of our stations, I think, Free Talk Live are on. Four we're on that they're not on. And they're on a lot that we're not on. They're also on. They're mostly on the Tea Party type stations, but they're on like probably three or four progressive stations.
Oh, well, I bet that goes over real well.
But we're on a station in Wyoming and South Dakota that they're not on, that isn't even a talk station. I mean, it's like a country music station and NASCAR station, and they have like two talk shows, and it's us and the guy who owns the station does the morning drive show.
Okay, so in other words, what you're saying is they need more Randy and bring back Jack.
Yeah.
So, as a matter of fact, at Liberty Fest, I was kind of worried about this because the place that we went out to, Circle Pines, they come off a little bit hardcore lefty. And I was talking to the program director there, and she and another guy were talking about, oh, yeah, I listen to Free Talk Live every night. There's a station that Free Talk Live is on. So they're not even streaming it.
Huh. Who comes off as a little lefty? The Circle Pines people or you guys?
The Circle Pines people. I mean, yeah, Graham, we have our token commie, but he takes a shower. And
that guy's annoying.
He's a very nice guy. He's very good-hearted. I don't think that he would try to force everybody into communism. And he's such a nice guy that if he did try, I'd probably wing him the first time he tried it.
Well, you know, communists are as likely not to shower as they are to mandate showers. So,
or to not shower and mandate that you must shower.
Yeah,
he's more of a voluntary communist, which is kind of crazy because with state communists, they know they have to point guns at people to get them to become communists, and the voluntary communists think that people are just going to do it without having guns pointed at them.
And the problem with voluntary communism,
and they might.
Well, the problem with voluntary communism is most people who want to engage in it don't have anything to redistribute.
Right, right.
No, they imagine themselves on the recipient end of the communist, the new order, but, or whatever.
You know, people that have a lot of stuff aren't likely to, you know, I don't need to tell you this. You're the one. You're our resident Occupy Wall Street correspondent, Davi. You've lived amongst these people. I've just read about them. Although I've been on some hippie communes in New Hampshire and upstate New York with both of my sisters when I was a teenager, when they were living. One was living on one and the other was hanging out at one.
Groovy.
The one in New Hampshire was actually pretty close to Porkfest.
You know, I've also noticed that they imagine mass demonstrations that don't affect them. Like, I remember sitting out on the street with the Occupy San Francisco crowd, and there was a bunch of unemployed people who wanted to organize a Don't March in March. And the idea was that everybody shouldn't go to work in the month of March to show the power of the working class. And I'm like, none of you have jobs.
Well, I realized this and pointed it out about 20 years ago, is that most people who shout "Workers of the World Unite" have never worked a day in their life.
Yeah.
So kind of like Karl Marx.
Yeah.
He never did a day of hard labor in his life, but he wrote about the plight of the working man.
Tell us a little about Karl Marx. Not everybody knows about Karl Marx.
Well, Karl Marx, he was very intelligent. In the last few years of his life, he picked up a couple of additional languages, to include Russian, and he was studying some really heavy duty stuff. After he dropped dead and they cleaned out the carcass and all the stuff in his apartment or home, whatever you want to call it, they found that he'd been working on a whole bunch of stuff. But the one thing that he did not do, it was he was supposed to do his magnum opus, which was going to be the culmination and of his previous ideas and the expansion of it, but he never did it. And it is widely suspected, well, I don't know widely, because there's Marxists that think that, you know, well, he was just kept down by the man. But it was widely suspected that he came to realize that he was so full of fucking bullshit that he just couldn't do it.
A lot of the things that he advocated were impossible at the end.
I got to say, man, I'm so brainwashed about the cussing. Like, my finger twitched when you said that. Go on. Well, go on with your fucking bad fucking self.
You don't.
My favorite thing about Marx is that he had an affair with his, like, maid. That is essentially like the property owner having a relationship in which there's a power disparity with the help.
You know, it's funny when you search the word cuss dump, the first thing that comes up on Google is an article I wrote on Talkers Magazine. Apparently that thing's not really called the cuss dump. I guess I made that up.
What do you mean? Of course it's called that.
No, it's called the 7-second delay. I just called
that's silly.
Cuss dump's funnier.
You don't need a cuss dump. We have a dodgy internet connection.
Well, because the thing is, too, like on the actual physical box, the rack mount unit, and on the remote control for it that I can do from my side, it says dump. Like, there's a red button with the word dump on it. And I'm like, it's the cuss dump. What else could you call that thing?
No, that's a pause button for when you have to go poo-poo kitty.
For 7 seconds.
Yeah. Oh. Going back to Marx. So basically, Marx was fucking the working class, is what Dobby's trying to tell us.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. I think he even had like an illegitimate son he didn't claim through her or something like that. I mean, somebody should fact check me because I don't know this for sure.
I don't really have a desire. I don't need to fact check on a podcast. I'll fact check another host on a radio show.
Oh, well, if we're not fact-checking, Karl Marx was also a reptilian alien who worked for the Illuminati in an effort to push the tide of tyranny toward the East.
He also tried to censor the internet. He used copyright takedown notices on YouTube to remove fair use critique of him. Yeah, Karl Marx did. Mm. I heard that.
Oh, right. It was the True Marx channel, right?
It was the True Bullshit.
Or was it Marx Damon? I always get those two mixed up.
As a matter of fact, since central banks are one of the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto, Karl Marx was the instrumental person at Jekyll Island pushing for the creation of the Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
Wow. And
actually, it was Thomas Jefferson who said, the problem with the internet is the veracity of determining the truth of that which is on it.
You know, Karl Marx was also the money changer in the temple in the New Testament.
Ah.
Which is really strange since he never had any money.
The fighting Jesus kicked his ass.
Yeah. Going back to some semi-serious stuff, he grew up sponging off of his family.
Yeah.
And his family was well-to-do, but they were by no means wealthy. And finally, when he had drained them, that's when he started freeloading off of Friedrich Engels. And basically, he just spent his entire existence begging Engels for money. And Engels was an heir to a family fortune. The family were industrialists, so Engels was, I think, overseeing the factories and all this other stuff. So, yeah, it's really interesting that you know, you got one communist that won't work. Well, that's not really interesting. That's pretty much commonplace. But you got another commie that runs business. And I would imagine they didn't give his workers $15 an hour for working in the cafeteria.
You know, I just tested my internet speed and it's back to normal and even probably faster than normal now. If we wanted to, we could probably do the second hour on radio. I don't know if I want to, though. What do you think?
You
want
to cut in?
I don't know. It's up to you guys if you want me to ask.
Yeah, let's do it.
You want to do it?
It's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, let's rag for another 15 minutes and then take a little break and go do it.
We could actually do it. The break comes up right now. We could call him on. We could do it now if you want.
Okay.
Let me fire it up and call him. Can't cuss though.
Well, now we've broken the habit.
Yeah, I don't know if he'll want us to do it, but we'll see.
The floodgates are open.
Let me call him up.
Well, actually, when I was on that drunken abortion of a podcast at Porkfest, I managed to not cuss.
So you say.
What's the drunken abortion podcast?
Oh. one in the morning, Chandler, Diana, and a few others and I were podcasting in the campground, and somebody came over and said, "Hey, it's one in the morning. Knock it off with all that noise."
Oh.
So, Freedom Fiends, getting noise complaints at Porkfest.
Hey, Kyle, it's Michael Dean. I have my full internet's back now if you wanted to have us cut in after the next break. Yeah, do you want to test it right now?
All sizes of colloidal silver, colloidal minerals,
and I am connected now.
On sale. Choose from Herbal Healer's great variety of weight loss products like apple cider vinegar,
how's it look?
Hoodia, and Metabolic Complex and Pro-Metabolic, all on sale now. Also, the anti-parasite Intestinal Freedom and Wormwood
Is
Plus
it less
Complex,
than perfect?
Plus Stevia Liquid Sweetener and the Super Enzymes, all on sale for summer at herbalhealer.com.
All right, let's cut us in after this break. What do you think?
Correspondence courses in natural medicine. Enjoy same-day shipping and free online newsletter.
All right, let me come back to the next hour. I'll Comrex you at like 1 minute after the hour. How's that?
Quality natural medicine.
Leave connected? Okay, cool.
Since
thanks, man.
Herbal Healer Academy. All right,
bye.
The Freedom Fiends back in Oakmont, just outside of Cheyenne, Wyoming. The first hour of the show did not go out as planned because we were all arrested for free speech violations, meaning we attempted free speech and we were getting indoctrinated and beaten and taught the right things. And now we have
Obamacare. They beat us up and then they gave us Obamacare and told us why our federal family is our friends.
Yeah, the federal family is like the uncle that molested you and then gave you a student loan that you'll never be able to pay off. This is Sander Fien, and I'm joined by Michael Dean, who's laying prostrate on the floor.
I'm lying prostrate on the floor. Yeah, I am. It makes my back feel good. I'm not really having back pain, but I just really enjoy being at one with the floor. This is going to be a very strange Fiends. You know, following today's Free Talk Live, where they just talked for 2 hours about the joys of psychedelic mushrooms and buying drugs on Silk Road. I just, you know, we don't do drugs and we don't have drugs, but I feel like we should like put ourselves in a mind state of feeling like that.
Gummy shrooms.
Yeah, so I'm on the floor and let's turn on my strobe light, my black light together.
And this episode of Freedom Fiends is brought to you by the Bee Slick Wyoming Bison Hair Emporium. And yeah, we are also joined by our fellow fiend, Dobby Barker, who is over on the left coast. How are you doing, Dobby?
Excellent. How are you guys doing?
He's our resident communism correspondent because he's in California.
That's me.
Yeah, he's the fiend on the commune doing the reports.
I'm in charge of inter-economic dialogue.
Which means you have to decide whose wealth to redistribute. And weren't we talking during the break about how, like, the problem with communism is that most people, like, with voluntary communism, is that the only people that want to volunteer for it don't have anything to redistribute.
Yep. It's because they want to be the recipients. Everyone wants to volunteer to receive other people's money.
Yeah.
My grandfather had a story that he told. It was about a chauffeur that would go to the International Communist Workers meeting each year, and he every year he would ask his boss for the time off, and then finally there came a time where he didn't ask for the time off anymore, and the boss finally asked him about it, and he says, "Hey, you haven't been to your commie meeting in like 2 years," and the chauffeur says, "Well, we figured it out that if everybody redistributed all the wealth and everything, everybody would have about $15,000. I quit going when I hit $16,000. So, yeah, not really the best idea. And it's basically they complain that libertarians say, screw you, I got mine. But communism is screw you, I got yours.
Well, I think we should reiterate the concept we were discussing in the first hour because, well, we weren't on the radio, and it's because the government is interfering with my internets, but they gave me back my internet, so we're back on radio. But we did a podcast for the first hour, and I will reiterate what we said because it's worthwhile sharing with our radio audience in Sundance, Wyoming, and Belle Fouche, South Dakota. The concept, Kyle Bennett came up with this concept that every accusation from a liberal is really a confession, and I expanded it to every accusation from a statist is really a confession. So discuss, please.
Well, the reason I think this makes sense, and it strikes me as true, I really want it to be true, and so I want to flesh it out. And I think it's because whenever anybody says they want the government to do something, it's because they don't want to do it themselves. So when somebody accuses you of not caring about something because you don't want the government to do it, that's because they don't care about that thing. They want someone else to do it when you're saying, no, I want to do it myself.
Yeah, and like how many liberals who say, we need to help the poor, which really means we need to steal government money, have the government steal money from everyone and give it to the poor. How many of those people actually have gone out and fed poor people? You're not a liberal, Davi, and you have gone out, you regularly go out and feed poor people.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's the same thing as the communist idea that the most enthusiastic communist doesn't have anything to share. It's also that they're often the poor people in the soup kitchens too. They're like the Occupy, you know, commies that like are involuntarily homeless and things like that. They want to be on the recipient of that stuff. They don't want to be the one ladling it out.
You know, what'd be really funny would be to go into a San Francisco soup kitchen and say, I will give $1,000 to anybody who can prove that they're an active Republican in this room right now. Because everyone would want to claim it for the $1,000. But, you know, you'd have to, like, provide proof, like, you know, party registration or something. That'd be fun.
Could you imagine all the cringing and the wincing and the eyes squinting?
Yeah, I'm a Republican.
Yeah, like you know, just land your Halliburton helicopter in the parking lot and say, your free condo and townhouse is waiting. If there's a single Republican here, we will take you to your new life.
In Gitmo North, just outside of Cheyenne.
You'd be accused of buying votes.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
I actually tend to agree with Kyle, and I consider it to be self-projection. Like when a liberal says, I don't think anybody should have guns because then people are just going to go kill people they don't like. I think a lot of liberals would do that.
Yeah, they want to kill people they don't like. I mean, they really do, because think about how in favor of laws most of them are that, you know, you get 5 years in prison if you get caught with a magazine that holds more than 10 rounds. They're all in favor of that. That basically means I want you dead if you have some guns more than what some politician thinks you should have.
Yeah, I think that they prefer that government do the killing, but they're not above getting their hands dirty, especially if it's somebody that's a conservative or a libertarian. And there is a difference between a conservative and a libertarian. The conservative is just a different type of socialist from the liberal, where the libertarian actually believes in freedom and not bothering other people and not using government to bend other people over to their will.
Yeah.
So
we just need the right kind of socialism. That's what we need.
That's what they think. Yeah.
Vote harder. Get the right socialist in charge.
Well, to play devil's advocate, you know, it's easy to say that democracy isn't working because it's 51%, you know, stealing from the other 49%. And eventually all democracies collapse. And it's easy to say communism doesn't work because there's so many historic examples. And it's easy to say, you know, socialism is failing. Look at England. But to play the devil's advocate, what about like Scandinavia? How are they faring in their sort of socialism?
Well, as far as Scandinavia goes, they're kind of like Canada and England, to where it's socialistic, but it's not full blown socialism. So it's not a real comparison. They do have very high taxes, which provides their free-ish health care. But yeah. But if you're getting the living daylights taxed out of you, then the health care is not really free.
I remember it was either Colbert Report or Daily Show. And I don't know how much truth or selective editing there was in this, because it was in that segment that always has a lot of selective editing in it. But it seemed like an anti-socialist statement, because it was it was like 3 or 4 years ago. They went and interviewed whoever was like the number one pop singer in Denmark or Sweden at the time. And it was like they kind of did it like MTV crib style, but it was ironic because, you know, she lived in like a rented 2-room apartment and was doing her own laundry and, you know, was not blinged out at all. And she was the most successful, you know, celebrity in that country at the time.
Where did she stash her cash?
Probably
Switzerland.
Liechtenstein.
Vatican City.
Yeah.
But
Bitcoin.
Well, here's the thing, and this is something that socialists do not comprehend, is the pricing mechanism. The prices, we know that's what you pay for a good or a service or something like that, but you have to look at what goes into the price. So when you have something that's subsidized like healthcare, you may pay less for it at the cash register, but you're paying more for it through the taxation. So it's not any cheaper. As a matter of fact, when you have to go through all the layers of government bureaucracy, it becomes more expensive.
It really is a redistribution of wealth too, because I priced it recently. Like, first of all, like, I don't have any health insurance. My wife has it through her work, but she works for one person, you know, so he doesn't make enough to provide both of us with health insurance. So I've been pricing it basically because I'm 50 and think I need some health insurance too, more than I think Obama thinks I need some. I just missed the cutoff point by like a few thousand dollars a year of getting it like practically free, like getting it subsidized. And it's so expensive. Like, I could pay like $1,100 a month. No, it was $1,100. Yeah, it was, something. I could pay like something like $3,000 or $4,000 a year and get life insurance, get health insurance that is Obamacare compliant, so I wouldn't get the $600 a year fine, but it wouldn't really provide me anything. It would basically only cover, you know, catastrophic. Like, if I break an arm and have to go to the hospital, I'm still going to pay it all. It was like that kind of cheap health insurance. But
keeps the government off your back. That's
yeah,
the point.
But it would be basically paying like $3,000 or $4,000 a year to save the government from finding me $600. And if to actually get health insurance, like, I could barely maybe afford that, but it's cheaper to just pay the $600 a year. I was interested in getting some health insurance that actually like would help me if I have to see a doctor. And that would be like $6,000 a year, and I really can't afford that. And if we as a couple made $2,500 a year less, I would have my Obamacare mostly subsidized, and, you know, like, basically it'd be free. So it really
it would be zero cost to you, because there is no such thing as free.
Yeah, yeah, there you go.
because
it's horrid.
Just,
it's just a big scam.
It's just a shell game of how the bill is paid, and
it just becomes more difficult to calculate. I mean, that's the point. It's about hiding the cost in the price. It's not about actually producing it more efficiently or cheaper.
Well, you know, I hate to agree with like Rush Limbaugh, and you know, he has gone on and on and on about Obamacare, which is kind of ironic because he probably has the best platinum health care you could possibly have, and he's probably had it for 20 years through his own business. But, you know, I guess he cares about the little people that listen to him. So, but I kind of agree with him that the whole thing is just a scam to collapse the health care system so the government can nationalize it.
Look, we screwed it up. We're the only ones that can fix it.
Yep.
More Freedom Fiends coming up right
Worms.
After this.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Woof woof.
Go ahead, Lou.
Freedom Fiends. Tasing you with liberty since, I don't know, midnight. A couple years ago.
Midnight. Since midnight.
Since 2 a.m. Eastern time. Yeah. Good morning, Sturgis. Good morning, Sundance. Good morning, Cairo, Illinois.
Cairo.
Cairo, yeah. And this is Lusander Fiend. I'm joined by Dobbie Barker and Mr. Michael W. Dean. The first hour of this show will be released as a podcast that we did separately. It's a surveillance. It's a surveillance sound of our interrogations and beatings and and just general morale improvement.
That part of the revolution will not be televised.
Yeah. So, quick question for you guys. Have you heard all these people talking about water's a human right? It should be free.
No. Although, water rights in general are a pretty big issue in my part of the country, in the mountains.
Yeah, mine
West.
Too.
Yeah.
Is that because you have none?
Pretty much, yeah. You know, the first, they talk about how Wyoming was a great state because it was the first to offer women the vote, and it was the first state to have a female governor, and the first female governor of this state sold all of our water rights to South Dakota.
Nice.
Yeah.
The reason
well,
I
water
bring up
should
the-
be free if you can catch it out of the air.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can't even do that. The reason I bring this up is because there's a meme going around. Is I guess it's the CEO of Nestle. They do bottled water as well as like candy and stuff like that. And he's calling for privatization of water. And the response has been, well, you hate people that don't have water. When water is privatized, nobody will be able to afford it. And blah, 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 blah. You know, just the usual statist nonsense. And I've heard people say, well, water is a human right. It should be free. You know, you should turn on your tap and it should just pour out with no cost and all this other stuff. And this goes back to the last segment with healthcare, that there is no such thing as totally free goods and services.
Well, you know what? Let's imagine for a moment that water was free. Digging a well is not free. Laying pipe is not free. Creating plastic bottles is not free. Those big machines that put the vacuum sealed caps on bottles are not free. The truck that drives the bottles to your house is not free. The employee that loads your water cooler is not free. So, it's more than just like delivering a molecule to you. There's a whole infrastructure involved that, you know, is an industry.
You know, I think that in places like the Mountain West that tend to have more conservatives and more money, actually. I mean, like, for all the wealth that California has for, you know, from Hollywood and from Silicon Valley, the state economy is pretty bad. And Wyoming actually is one of the only states that's still in the black, that isn't running a deficit. And I think it's largely because people in places like this largely work with their hands. So they actually have a concept of that water doesn't just come out of the tap. You know, most people here have either, dug a ditch or laid pipe or driven pipe to some sort of, you know, water or oil field, or have a brother or cousin who does intense physical labor. Like everybody here, more people here than in a city, a big city, understand what goes into physical resources. And I'm not saying one place is always better than the other, but I'm saying, I think that one of the things of growing up in a city is that you get really removed from the reality of things that just come out, like water, natural gas, oil, gasoline, food, you know, the resources that are necessary to run a society. People don't even understand where they come from. They kind of think they just appear in the stores.
Yeah, water doesn't grow on trees.
Yeah, like Davi, you have slaughtered a goat. Lou, you've helped slaughter a pig, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I've skinned
amongst other things.
I've shot a rabbit and skinned it and eaten it. And
you know, I don't make a habit of slaughtering goats. It was just important to me to know where my food came from. Yeah, so I wanted to do it at least once, you know?
Yeah, and I think a lot of people who eat meat would be really, I think some people would be disgusted talking to you to hear that you had slaughtered a goat. I mean, they would think you had some kind of mental problem, but they still eat
meat. You know, I was considering vegetarianism at the time, and somebody told me, hey, you know what? If you ever slaughtered an animal, you'd be a vegetarian. And I'm like, okay, challenge accepted. And I'm actually more convinced that, you know.
Why did it convince you to eat meat?
This is, you know, your experience may vary, but this was a very cooperative animal. It didn't like appear to suffer, which is, I realize, counterintuitive. Maybe it was just the way these guys did it. These were old timey Bedouins that did it by hand. So they were very nice to the goat, but you know, yeah.
Cool. We'll be back with more tales from the Middle East with Tavi when we get back.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Yeah. Yeah. Preach it, guys. There's a new version of Peacekeeper out, so let's hear a party noise here. Let's have a party.
Whee!
Meow, meow, meow.
Corey Drummond just contacted me and said that the new version of Peacekeeper is out, peacekeeper.org. Tell me a little bit about Peacekeeper, you guys. You know about it. I don't have Android, so I know what it is, but you talk about it.
My understanding is that it's an app that is aiming to sort of replace police services or somehow like reduce the need for them or something.
Count me
in. But I've never used it.
Well, they're looking for beta testers, so go to peacekeeper.org and maybe you can get in on the beta test for the new version, the 2.99 version on Google Play.
I haven't checked it out too much. Derek J and I discussed it a couple months ago, and essentially what it is, it's a mutual defense type app. So rather than calling the cops and having them come out and kill a suicidal 16-year-old, what you actually do is you contact your friends who will come, you know, they're in the vicinity that won't take several hours to get there.
And they send a hot 16-year-old girl over to date him, and then he doesn't want to kill himself?
I don't think they go quite that far, but essentially if you have a situation going on, and it could be medical, it could be darn near anything, you send out the alert, and I believe that it says what type of emergency it is, and the people in your neighborhood can come running.
Yeah, it sounds like a great idea, but it wouldn't work for me because my neighbors wouldn't care. They'd probably stand outside and eat pizza and cheer.
Well, the idea, I think, is that the app kind of notifies you the sort of user density of your area. And so it may be that the next user is closer than the police officer, because there's a good chance the police officer doesn't care either.
Yeah, there is that.
It creates a different first responder. As example, with me, I have some medical training. So if there was a problem in my neighborhood, I could probably get there a little bit quicker than an ambulance could. Or especially if it happened in the building.
I'm just looking at the screenshot. It looks like there's four kinds of calls. There's an intruder call, a medical call, a fire call, and an abduction call.
Abduction, like aliens?
Maybe it's like a homing thing if you're abducted, but it might also be like a missing person thing.
I think that's it.
So kind of like a decentralized Amber Alert.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. Send lawyers, goats, and money.
Goats. Yeah. Right. So speaking of people who live in places like me where they don't know their neighbors or they don't have neighbors. And speaking of goats, Davi was going to tell us some pleasant Bedouin stories from his childhood. I don't know what a Bedouin is. Why don't we start with that?
A Bedouin is essentially like a nomad. If you're in anywhere in the Middle East or North Africa, the Bedouins are sort of like the rural people that have moved into the outskirts to avoid whatever the politics of their day is. And it's a thriving culture in many parts of the Middle East where they just have nothing to do with their state and their government. They're totally, it's like the Appalachians for hundreds and hundreds of miles, right?
Yeah. Or it's people in, northeastern Wyoming in the Middle East.
Or the Western frontier in the 1800s.
Which was also northwestern Wyoming, yeah.
And they're also kind of like their own Sundance class. Like, you can't really run a government in the Middle East and infringe upon them too much because they're like a protected endangered species in a way.
Wow.
So, I don't know. It's interesting. To me, they strike me as the sort of the rugged individualists of those cultures, right? Where they're raising their own animals. They're raising their own families. They don't ask for any services. They don't ask for, you know, any handouts. And they want to just keep to themselves. And I always found that very respectable. So the person that taught me to slaughter a goat was a couple of guys from Mauritania who grew up doing it on their own little family farm or whatever. And yeah, that was how I learned.
Wow.
Not in Mauritania. This was in Fremont, but that's where they were from.
Okay. How'd they wind up in Fremont?
Fremont, California?
Yeah, Fremont, California. I don't know. Immigrants, I guess. I know that the older gentleman was here because he had a medical condition that was not treatable in Mauritania. Like, they just didn't have the equipment, something to do with like liver dialysis or something. And so he came out here for medical reasons. As far as the younger guy, I think was his student because he was an Arabic teacher.
Hey, can we talk about police brutality in California?
We sure can.
If I don't want to interrupt your story, if you're done,
I'm done.
I pulled you down a weird goaty path, and like I don't know where the goats went.
Yeah, I have done this once. I'm not an expert in goat slaughtering.
Yeah,
the goat hole.
I was down the goat hole. I saw part of a documentary the other day on like PBS or something like that, Davi, called Fruitville Station, which is about that kid.
I've seen that.
Yeah. So tell me about that situation, because I know that a lot of people didn't care or thought like, oh, he probably deserved it. He was a black guy with weed in his pocket who didn't comply with the police. But my feeling is, you know, even if you're a white rural person who doesn't have weed in your pocket, you should care that in the city cops murder young black guys with weed in their pocket for not complying with the police, because what happens there is just a few years away from happening a lot where you are. And apparently it just happens all the time everywhere now anyway. The police just shoot people.
Well, I don't think that he had weed in his pocket. And if he did, that was nothing to do with why he was being detained.
If he did, the police who shot him didn't know it until after they shot him.
Right. So what it was, and the other thing is he did comply. He was on the ground. He was complying. He was on his belly and in handcuffs when this happened. And so essentially there were two groups of friends on BART, which is sort of like this weird public transit light rail kind of thing.
It's like
a monorail.
It's just like the DC BART, DC Metro. If you've ever been on that, it's literally like made by the same company from the same blueprints.
Yeah. And it looks exactly like the monorail in The Simpsons, if you've ever seen that episode. And so there were these two groups of friends, and somebody among them got in a fight on the train and then got off the train. And so they were all detained for fighting. And it's unclear whether this person was involved, but essentially a cop put him on his belly, put him in handcuffs, and shot him in the back.
Basically hogtied him.
And hogtied him and shot him. And the accusation or the justification the police gave is, oh, I thought that was my taser. Which is still excessive use of force.
Because he's already hogtied and can't do anything. Yeah.
Right.
And it was different than a lot of police shootings, because there were 20 people filming it on cell phones.
Right. Essentially, the train was in the station, and everyone who was witness to it all pulled out their phones and started recording it, and it just exploded. And it wasn't, you know, there was no real reason, unless you're just sort of saying, oh, well, he's black, so he deserved it. There was no real justification for the use of force, because he was complying. He was sitting on the ground. I think he was refusing to answer any questions, but that's your right. And so
they shot him. They shot him for being constitutional, basically.
Yeah, essentially.
I think I've seen this video clip, and it looks like he was very, very subdued, with a couple of cops standing on his neck and everything else.
Yeah, for sure.
There was an article in Vice from June 14th of this year, and it showed a El Paso cop shooting a handcuffed man from behind, execution style, in the police station. It was like in the loading dock area, and I guess this guy was resisting or whatever, but anyway, he was handcuffed. There's two cops and he's rolling around. They could have called in more people, but instead this cop decided to pull the trigger. And strangely enough, there wasn't a whole lot of outrage over this. I just saw it for the first time a couple of days ago. Is it so commonplace that it's easy to miss this stuff, or why wasn't this a big deal? Why weren't there protests and marches and everything else?
Well, there were about Oscar Grant. That's the BART shooting. The other thing that's crazy about it is that the man's sidearm and his taser are on opposite sides of his body, and the tasers that they carry are nothing like pistols. So I just, you know, I've fired a pistol. It's nothing like firing a taser. So it's unfathomable to me that that's really what happened. But the alternative is he just shoots people because he likes shooting people. Like that's almost as disturbing to me.
Happened with community blowback and what happened to the cop?
There were riots and stuff, and I think they there's a video of people setting a cop car on fire and jumping on it, and that was popular on the internet for a while. And they also, the sort of colloquial thing is they've renamed the Central Park in Oakland Oscar Grant Plaza. I don't even remember what the original name is. And he's sort of become this sort of like martyr of activism in the Bay Area whenever you talk about police brutality. I think the cop, they essentially hid him away because they were worried that there would be like violent blowback. And then I think they just like relocated him or something.
Yeah.
I don't know that he was ever convicted of anything.
He's probably working in Wyoming now.
The Murderer Protection Program.
Right.
Yeah. There's an article from Students for Liberty, and they actually provide a good solution to the problem of police brutality, and it's titled "It's Time to Get Rid of the Cops."
Yeah,
and I saw it. Rather than just having the usual reforms of passing freedom laws and trying to make it look like something it's not, they actually call for a straight up abolition of the cops, the government cops, and replacing them with completely private police or private security and protection, which would probably be a very good step in the right direction. If you have private security that is, you know, concerned about protecting their people, they're not out revenue generating, they're not out hassling people for nanny laws, they're not violating the hassle doctrine, and they're also more responsive to their customers because their customers are actually the ones that are paying them.
Yeah.
Right.
And there's a very good example here in Detroit about private security, and that's the Threat Management Center. I found out about them through copblock.org when they came through on their tour, and I went down to a presentation, and the owner, Dale Brown, gave an explanation of how his firm is different from the police in that they look at actually preventing, where the police are only reactive and they respond. So the cops will draw a chalk outline around you, yeah, but threat management will keep you from getting killed.
Yeah, the police are really, really good at showing up to a crime scene and taking pictures of the aftermath.
While eating donuts.
So here you go. I have it in the Wikipedia article. It says that the jury found him, Johannes Mazerly is the cop. They found him guilty of involuntary manslaughter, but not guilty of second-degree murder or voluntary manslaughter.
Is he in prison?
It says
he should be.
Added 10 years to a prison sentence and made him eligible for probation, forcing him to serve 85% of his sentence as opposed to 50%. What is the actual time?
That's a lot for a cop who shoots somebody.
Yeah.
You know, I like the solution Lou was talking about of just eliminating them, because I don't feel they protect anybody in any way. And they hurt people and hurt dogs and hurt property and cost money. But I would be even happy with the minarchist solution at first of just, you know, if they were accountable for murdering people the same way that citizens are.
Yeah. Take away the diplomatic immunity.
Yep. Well, the Minstatus solution is what brought us to where we are today.
I know.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
It's been a long, strange trip, Freedom Fiends. And, this has been a two-hour show on the radio. We were only on for the second hour, but this is going to be a longer podcast than usual because we did a full hour of talking at the beginning with no breaks. It was kind of fun. But since it is live radio, we do have some breaking news, and Lou's going to read it.
Can I get some sound effects first? Breaking news. This just in from The Onion. Absent-minded nation catches itself turning to its leaders again. It starts off, the dateline is, I don't know, sometime recently, from Washington, D.C., rolling their eyes at their own foolishness and silently chastising themselves the second they realize their mistake. Millions of absent-minded Americans once again caught themselves turning to their leaders this week, sources confirmed on Wednesday. The embarrassed U.S. populace who confided to reporters for a moment that they had found themselves actively seeking meaningful action from their elected representative on matters ranging from small local issues to major international catastrophes admitted that they couldn't help but laugh at themselves for following the mental blunder. Oh, my God. But anyway, so apparently The Onion is pointing out that government is like the intruder that breaks into your home, throws rancid meat, a gallon of motor oil on your table, and says, "Oh, look, I made you pancakes."
Yeah. Do you feel like the Onion is getting more anarchist or something? It feels like they have more and more of these stories that just point at the folly of everybody. It seems like The Onion used to be leftists picking on the right, and even so, they were funny, but it seems like they've thrown that out the window or gotten some new writers. Do you guys get that impression too, or is that just me?
I think anarchy is the natural manure of satirism.
Ah. I mean, yeah, even like, you know, if you even take like Mad Magazine in the 70s, you know, when I was growing up reading it, and it made fun of all politicians from left and right and made them look completely ridiculous, which is probably why there was a conspiracy theory that Mad Magazine was run and paid for by the Kremlin. And I think part of the theory for that was that the magazine was too inexpensive. Like, they were selling it for a dime when other magazines were a quarter, and somebody did the maths and said that it's impossible for that to be happening without some sort of secret funding. But it was not true. They were just running it well.
Just think of Mark Twain. I mean, Mark Twain is practically an anarchist.
I think he was, though.
The thing about satire is based so strongly on truth. It's just a slight exaggeration of the truth. Speaking of satirists, Will Rogers? Yeah. He was a satirist back in the early 20th century, and one of the jokes that he told was perhaps there should be a constitutional amendment prohibiting education of any type. If it were to be as successful as the prohibition of alcohol, America would have the smartest race of people on the planet within 5 years.
That's good.
There you go.
And what I really find is this open contempt for government. And I'm not sure if it's contempt for this government or government in general, but is really increasing quite a bit. Now, I will say that the ANCAP community has grown quite a bit, or the libertarian abolitionist, or even the mini statist community, realizing that government is not the answer to anything. You know, it's real funny with Ronald Reagan. He says government does nothing better than the private sector. And that should have immediately been followed by, well, we should abolish a government. Why would you keep something that's less efficient? And if you say the part about government, you know, being not so good, conservatives love it. And then when you say get rid of that lousy thing, they're like, oh my God, yeah. no,
that's kind of mind-blowing.
We have to have incompetence.
That's kind of mind-blowing to me of how anti-government most conservatives are these days, and how much they love to say things Goldwater-esque or Reagan-esque things about, you know, the worst sentence in English language is, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you. But if you talk about eliminating it, they scream. They hate it. They want it tiny. But if you talk about getting rid of it, they don't like it. You can even talk about drowning in a bathtub. But I saw an article recently that said, it's time for conservatives to reclaim conservatism from the libertarians. And I'm like, they can have it.
Yeah, his complaint is that libertarianism isn't socialistic, fascistic, and authoritarian enough for him.
Ugh.
Scumbag.
Good show, guys. Good, long, weird, multi-level split shift show.
Worms.
Thank you. I enjoyed being had tonight.
Yes, thank you for yeah. Nice having
Wines.
You.
Wines.